guess I'm asking a question here. If you're going to sequester a lot of carbon in soils, or if you intend to, where are you going to get the nitrogen? If you want to sequester 1 megaton of carbon in the soil, 1,000 kilograms, nominal CN ratio of 20, you need 50 kilograms of nitrogen. Where are you going to come up with that? Other than nitrogen fixation or fertilization. So by way of illustration, I'm just going to go through some examples that you've all seen before from Walker Branch and the surrounding area of different rates of soil nitrogen and carbon accumulation that we've observed. So my objectives are to review these past studies over time, compare the observed changes with known inputs and outputs of nitrogen. In accounting for the inputs and outputs of carbon is not a big problem. Accounting for the nitrogen, as you'll soon see, is a problem. The sites are all located within 4 kilometers of one another. One's a mixed deciduous forest in Walker Branch, which I'm sure a lot of you know about. We did a whole tree harvesting study very nearby, where we harvested in 1980 both saw log and whole tree harvesting. Resampled them 15 years later and saw some inexplicably large changes in soil nitrogen, as you'll see. And then finally a loblolly pine plantation established in 86, and then we came back in the year 2000 and sampled those sites as well. The harvesting study was mixed oak forest, typic paleoadults, whole tree, saw log, and no harvesting. We sampled pre-harvest in 1980, post-harvest in 1995. Todd and I might go out in our walkers in a few years and sample it one more time before we're all done, I don't know. And so the analyses were, we archived all the old samples, so there hopefully wouldn't be any laboratory issues, analyzed them all again in 95, 96 for carbon and nitrogen and other nutrients as well. The loblolly pine plantation study was planted in 1982, I should say, and was fertilized back in those days with different treatments, and that's all been published in the past. I'm not going to spend time reviewing those results. The fertilization effects were long gone by the time we came back to resample again in the year 2000. And once again, we archived all the soil samples, and we came back and retrieved them, archived in glass jars, retrieve them and analyze them again along with the new samples that we took in 2000. And then Walker Branch resampling just published in the last issue of SSSAJ. We have originally 24 core plots established in the watershed, which were sampled in 1972 and again in 2004. Of those, there were 8 what we call intensive plots, were sampled in 72, 83, 93, and 2004, and I'll show you the results of those as well. So there are 8 different plots there that we have a time sequence for. And one of the good things about QA here is that Don Todd, still at Oak Ridge, was present and overseeing all of the samples that I have just discussed. So, you know, the same person, sometimes we'd find the same hole in the ground, so we had really good QA from that point of view. So first, the harvesting study. And again, this is one where we find a mysteriously large increase in nitrogen. Over on the left, you see the carbon balance. So in 1980, right after harvest, we have a lot of residue left behind in the saw log harvest study. And by 1995, that residue at about 85% decomposed and released a lot of organic matter basically to the atmosphere. And the soil carbon went up. Let me get my pointer here. There it is. Soil carbon went up, but it also went up in the whole tree harvesting site where there was hardly any residue left on the ground. The amount of nitrogen increase over here was just unbelievably large. We tried to dismiss it with quality assurance issues, calculating different errors in sampling depth, tried various ways to not believe this, but finally we just put it out there and said, we don't know what's going on. Because the amount of annual input from atmospheric deposition measured by Steve Lindbergh, including every particle of dust on the trees that he could find, would amount to about 150 kilograms per hectare over this period of time. And, can't get my pointer here again, we're picking up 830 here, and in the whole tree harvest site, even more, 1,320 kilograms per hectare. Where does this come from? There weren't nitrogen fixers present there, so it's a complete mystery. And here's in the loblolly pine plantation. In complete contrast to the whole tree harvest site, here it is, the carbon balance in 1982, basically nothing on the ground, and we got no accumulation of soil carbon, no accumulation of soil nitrogen. The carbon was sequestered completely above ground in the forest floor and in the biomass. Some nitrogen sequestration there, but it can pretty much be accounted for by atmospheric deposition. So unlike the whole tree harvest study, this one we can explain. We got the results we like, not much change in the soil. Most of the change above ground. And then here's the Walker Branch study, which in a lot of ways is the most mysterious of all. Between 82 and 93, these are in these core plots. In 72, we can't compare because, for reasons unknown to me, only the surface 0 to 15 and 45 to 60 centimeter samples were kept. And so there's no way to do the whole profile. I don't know why this happened. I didn't do it. So Carl Tretton published this second resampling, and he noted that this is the average of those eight core plots. So each of these probably represents six replicates, 48 individual samples. So we lost carbon, and it was significant, and lost some forest floor carbon as well. Lost a very large amount of nitrogen, far, far beyond what could be explained by any known leaching rate that anybody's ever measured on Walker Branch watershed. And then we come back in 2004, and the forest system, even though we found that it's losing calcium and acidifying and so forth, is gaining carbon and nitrogen at a horrendous rate. Biomass is way up, and the nitrogen accumulation's back up again. Now you can write off all this nitrogen change by saying, well, between 82 and 2004, there's no significant change. But this dip right here was significant, and that increase, I believe, was significant as well. So it looked like carbon and nitrogen are just going up and down over time on this particular watershed. And again, at rates of explaining the carbon changes is not a problem, but explaining the nitrogen changes is a big problem. Usually, in all the studies except Walker Branch, there was no change in the soil-seed-end ratio, no significant change, slight change in the Walker Branch seed-end ratio over time, but not very much. So here's the net annual carbon accumulation in the different resampling studies. The vegetation here, the loblolly pine by far being the greatest net carbon accumulator, Walker Branch being pretty much in a steady state with maybe some increases in later years. A lot of loss of forest residue here, logging residue decomposed. And then the soil, carbon changes here, much less than above ground. And the sum for the whole ecosystem here. The biggest being in the loblolly pine plantation because of above ground carbon sequestration, not the soil. And here are the net annual nitrogen accumulation in the studies, in the vegetation, the forest residue, and the soil. And these are the numbers that are very difficult to explain here. 57, 83 kilograms per hectare per year. We still can't figure that out. And over here in Walker Branch, just over the net whole sampling period, very little change. It'd be lost in the error. But again, in between 82 and 93, there was a significant change, and then again later in the next decade. So can we dismiss this somehow, this occult nitrogen? Binkley did his review on occult nitrogen in soils and dismissed everything except our whole tree harvesting study, in which he said, that, and truthfully so, that the authors themselves didn't believe what was going on, and I still don't necessarily believe it. But just because you don't like the numbers doesn't mean you can toss them out, so we reported them, and that's all we know. We analyzed all the old samples. We had the same person, Don Todd, present at every single sampling, and Furthermore, in the whole tree harvest site, the one with the most mysterious change, if you will, we had this calcium budget in there that worked out almost perfectly, indicating that our soil sampling probably was not flawed. And also did an analysis of the potential errors that might be involved, calculated what would a 2-centimeter sampling depth error cause me to miss this by on the Walker Branch study. And it doesn't even come close to explaining what we saw. So here's the calcium budget I was talking about, and this is published years ago. Net accumulation of calcium in the vegetation in the two sites. There was no difference in growth due to the forest residues. Here's the forest floor. We lost that amount in logging residues, we calculated, as they decomposed and released their calcium, and picked almost exactly that amount up in the soil profile and the soil calcium levels in the whole tree harvest, saw log harvest site were 2 to 3 times greater than in the whole tree harvest site after all that logging residue decomposed and released the calcium into it. So this served as sort of a backhanded quality assurance that our soil sampling couldn't really have been that far off. Either that or we had a comedy of errors where this calcium budget worked out almost perfectly. So, as we all know, and as even the global modelers point out now, that the best way to sequester carbon is in above ground biomass, because the C-N ratio in above ground biomass is far greater than the C-N ratio in soils. And so here's an example from our studies and many more like it. C-N ratios here as compared to the soil, tenfold greater basically. And the ecosystem C-N ratio goes up as you have more and more of the above ground biomass accumulating. There's the carbon sequestered per unit nitrogen over the sampling period, basically telling you the same thing. So to summarize, rates of sea accumulation in the soils from sites in close proximity within 4 kilometers of one another vary enormously over space and time. You cannot generalize even within the vicinity of Oak Ridge. You just can't generalize about what's going on. Changes in the soil end contents are sometimes inexplicable, even when we went every effort to find a problem, a quality assurance problem, or some issue that we could explain this away, we can't. So either A, we're sampling incorrectly and we still don't know how or why, or B, we don't understand the nitrogen cycle very well. I don't know which is true. The greatest potential for carbon sequestration is, of course, in vegetation because of its high C-N ratio. So the question for this symposium, can we soil be used for carbon credits or registries? Well, not by me, because I don't, how do we reduce sampling error and how do we account for this occult nitrogen? I don't know. Until and unless we can do that with Dale Cole's nitrogen fixers or something like that, then I still don't know what is happening here. But we have I sent this around the listserv a while ago, the new magic soil core. This is how, of course, we used to do it, quantitative pits. In this skeletal soil near Truckee, California, digging pits took about 4 hours. There's Don Todd again, by the way. And we're about 4 hours, 2 to 3 to 4 hours per pit, digging through rocks. And you've all done this kind of thing before, especially Steve Hamburg, who made us all do it. Well, never again, because now we have this diamond-bitted soil auger, which is a cement hole sampler. And it is fitted to a power auger, which my graduate student Ben Rao there attaches to a backpack. And then you walk off into the woods, taking much less equipment than before with all the pit sampling. Augering begins at 10:05. There's Michelle McNulty, my other graduate student, pouring. We were worried about the samples falling out of the core in our dry climate, so we watered them. So there goes ammonium and nitrate. I can live with that, as long as I get deep samples this way. Then you bang out the samples. clean out the auger. The sample includes proportional samples of roots that cored right through that piece of andesite there, took the rocks right with it. And at 10:35, half an hour later, we're down to 1 meter. So I will never again dig a quantitative pit. I'm too old to dig them anyway. I might dig a pit just to look at things, but never again. I'm going to watch, you know, sit back and watch these young people run the power auger. So with that, I'll see if there's time for questions. Not, you mean non-symbiotic fixtures?
Rhizobium.
I mean Frankia. Not that we know of.
What kind of species come back in the plot after the treatment?
Chestnut oak, red maple, yellow poplar, mixed oak forest, mostly from sprouting. Not much mimosa would have been the fixer. No black locust.
But isn't it true that the sites that have the big nitrogen, the mysterious nitrogen, are all actively regrown sites?
Yeah, except for one thing, that loblolly pine was the most actively regrowing of all, and it didn't have any nitrogen accumulation. So you can't generalize on that either, Peter.
Right.
But the whole tree harvest, yeah, was actively regrowing.